This episode is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. As the new year rolls in, we're bombarded with messages about transforming ourselves, but how about a different approach for 2024? Let's celebrate what's already great about us. So let's talk therapy. It's a powerful tool, not just for overcoming challenges, but for recognizing your strengths and making meaningful changes. Therapy teaches you to cope positively and set sound boundaries. It's for everyone who wants to sharpen their mental well-being. So if you've been thinking about therapy, but keep giving yourself excuses not to start, here's a little nudge to give BetterHelp a try. It's completely online, tailored to your schedule. You fill out a questionnaire, get paired with a licensed therapist, and remember, you can switch therapists anytime, no extra charge.
Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Jordan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Jordan.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit Spectrum.com/big deal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger, and this is Skeptical Sunday, a special edition of the Jordan Harbinger Show where fact checker and comedian David C. Smalley and I, we break down a topic that you may have never thought about, we open things up, we debunk common misconceptions, topics such as why the Olympics are kind of a sham, that's what we're going to tackle today, expiration dates and why they're nonsense, or why tipping makes absolutely no sense. Got a lot more coming up as well. Normally on the Jordan Harbinger Show, we decode the stories, secrets, and skills of the world's most fascinating people, and we turn their wisdom into practical advice that you can use to impact your own life and those around you. We have long-form interviews and conversations with a variety of amazing folks, from spies to CEOs, athletes to authors, thinkers, and performers. If you're new to the show or you want to tell your friends about it, our starter packs are the place to begin. These are collections of our favorite episodes organized by topic. They'll help new listeners get a taste of everything that we do here on the show. Topics like disinformation, cyber warfare, persuasion, influence, China and North Korea, investing in financial crimes, crime and cults, and more. Just visit jordanharbinger.com/start or take a look in your Spotify app to get started. Today on this edition of Skeptical Sunday, okay, I realize the Olympics have been over forever, for months now. They're not coming back for a couple of years. That is not going to stop me from complaining about them given the opportunity, and today I have that opportunity. Besides, not everything has to be timely, especially our rants about things we all hold dear, such as the Olympics. I used to watch and be a fan of the Olympics up until recently, and the more I learn about it, the less I like what I see, what I read, what I'm hearing. You know, I've never been, when they were in Atlanta in whatever, to the 90s, I was so close, I wanted to go. I've never been able to go, and I wanted to grab tickets. And it turns out it's actually really, really hard to go to the Olympics, and it's kind of fraught with the most non-political event on the globe, supposedly, is now fraught with political considerations. So I wanted to talk to you about it because I know you've got some thoughts on the Olympics.
Yeah, the tickets alone, like I think the cheapest tickets are between $2,000 to $3,000. I mean, it's insane.
And wow,
I looked into a little bit some of the ticket fraud issues, and there were people who were charged $3,200 for some tickets and then never either got to go, or it said it included the opening ceremony and it really didn't. This was after they booked their flights and booked their hotel, and then they start trying to get their money back, and they're like, sorry, says no refunds, and trying to sue like a nonprofit that is working through a ticketing agency. Who do you sue, the ticketing agency or the USOPC, which is technically a nonprofit? It's just so, like, I don't know. It's a very shady situation. But I've sort of boycotted the Olympics for quite some time now, just originally, just based on how poorly they treat the athletes from America.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean these foreign nations treating Americans poorly. I mean America treating our own athletes like absolute garbage. And as a kid, you know, you watch these folks on TV and you just look up to them and you're like, wow, they're doing it. And they're out there.
Yeah, they're on your Wheaties box, man.
Yeah, they're like our modern day heroes. And looking back on it, I'm like, yeah, that guy was getting paid. That one guy got paid by
Wheaties.
Yeah, but not by America, by a long shot. And so I really started diving into it, and it was shocking more and more. And then I noticed a couple of things come out saying that, like, the profits were down 40, or viewership was down 43%. People are boycotting, not only because of, you know, the past Winter Olympics with Beijing, but just in general. And I'm like, wait, I'm not the only one with this issue.
Yeah, interesting.
I start diving in and it's like tons of people have a problem with how poorly our athletes are treated.
I would love to get into this because I didn't know until recently that athletes didn't get paid. I figured we had an Olympic program that was funded by tax dollars and things that go to sports. I mean, we have cultural offices and things like that. You know, I assume their training was paid. And once you made Team USA, they fed, maybe housed and clothed you with sponsored goods and your training was free. And it looks like it's kind of the opposite. It's almost like you have to have enough money just laying around to not have to work and to buy expensive stuff.
Absolutely. Let me say unequivocally, athletes do not get paid. There is no salary for athletes. The only way they make money, there's a couple of different ways they make money, but the primary ways they can make money is if they win a medal. And America is one of the few countries that has nothing to do with funding its athletes. All of the funding comes from what's called the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, which is the USOPC for the rest of this conversation, because that's a mouthful. But 60% of Olympic athletes do not consider themselves financially stable.
What does that mean?
Most of them do jobs like DoorDash, Uber, Lyft, things like that, just to make ends meet.
Oh, man.
But they have to do those kinds of jobs to keep their schedules sort of flexible because of all the training they have to do.
I want to be careful not to be like, oh, my God, it sucks. They work for DoorDash, Uber, and Lyft, services I use literally every single day. Those are jobs that people need to do, but it is a little weird that somebody who's like, gee, I hope to bring home a silver medal or a gold medal in, I don't know, skating or something like that is like, here's your crappy Chinese food you ordered because you drank too much and now you're hungry. Like, that's not good.
Exactly. And I think the issue is not that those jobs are bad jobs. And I'm with you on that. Those jobs are very important jobs and those people were essential. And that's a great thing. And I use those services all the time. But the issue is if we want our athletes to go perform well and be good representatives of the country, they need to be training 6 to 8 hours a day, 6 days a week. They need to be able to focus. They need to not have to worry about where their, you know, next light bill is going to come from or how they are going to afford DoorDash if they need a meal, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. I don't want our sprinters sprinting from Panda Express to my house as part of their training regimen.
Right. And look, it's not to say that the USOPC doesn't have the money. In 2018 alone, they pulled in $317 million in revenue. $122 million of that was just broadcast revenue.
Oh, so like NBC buying the rights to put it on TV.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Or licensing. So anytime you buy a little toy that has the Olympic circles on it, the USOPC gets paid for that. And in 2018, they raked in enough money to have $48 million in profit.
Wow.
But they are a nonprofit, so they tend to put that money either into their employees or into programs, which I'll get into in a minute, which seem a little bit shady.
Programs sure sounds like paying athletes to train.
You would
but
think.
I guess it's not.
No. And that's where the money comes from. It's sponsorship, it's licensing, it's broadcast rights. So anytime you see the Olympic thing, like, you know, Toyota, a proud sponsor of,
whatever,
it's they pay for that time, but they also have to pay for the licensing to use the Olympic logo in their commercials. And so little figurines and people that are jogging around the block will buy a headband that has the Olympic logo on it to support the Olympians, and that money's not going to the Olympians. It's awful.
That's crazy. So who's getting the money? Like, where is the money? You mentioned programs and people.
That's a great question. So programs, I'll get into the programs in a sec, but like, so according to the Orange County Register, the USOPC spent $20 million more on employees than athletes in 2019. They spent more than $24 million on legal expenses just in the last 2 years with dozens of sex scandals and abuse accusations. The CEO alone made $800,000 in compensation. But the athletes, there's only really three ways to make money. Direct sponsorships on their own that they have to go get on their own, usually performance-based, and if they're super popular, you know, like a Serena Williams or someone, they can go out because they have the name. Two, prize money. Prize money typically happens as they're working up to the Olympics. So you have these side competitions that you enter. You have to pay to enter, by the way. You pay this entry fee. And then if you place fourth or fifth, you just don't win any money. But if you win first place, you might win 10 grand here and there.
Man.
For those side competitions. And then number three, winning. Like I said, the USOPC does pay if you win a gold medal. Ready for these numbers?
Yeah.
Strap in.
Okay, this is where the big money is, right? The winning a gold or silver medal.
Yeah, you think.
You're about to pop this bubble. I can see it in your face.
$37,500 for a gold medal.
What?
$22,500 for a silver and $15,000 for bronze. Now, some people may go, hey, that's one medal. It's at once every 4 years, first of all.
Oh, good point.
It's day after day after day of working without getting paid for this. So $37,500 for a gold medal sounds like a lot. Singapore pays $1 million for a gold medal.
That's more like it.
They pay $500,000 for silver. They pay $250,000 for bronze. So you're better off being a bronze level athlete in Singapore than a gold medalist in the United States of America.
This is crazy because if you think about it, every 4 years, right? So let's say I win four gold medals because I'm just ridiculous. I'm the best figure skater or snowboarder that the country has ever seen. I'm now making about as much as I would, probably less than I would if I managed like a reasonably busy Trader Joe's grocery store in the area.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And to compare it to other countries for gold medal prizes, France pays $73,000. Italy pays $201,000. Hungary pays $156,000. The Czech Republic pays $110,000. And the athletes in America just get these really small stipends. So, like, there are some sort of tiny little stipends here and there that you have to apply for, like a scholarship or whatever. Mm-hmm. It can come from the USOPC or other governing bodies, like the USA Swim Team has Swim USA, which is a governing body that sort of helps manage these types of things. One athlete on the U.S. women's row team reported making less than $2,000 a month in stipends during the entire time during the Olympics. A member of the fencing team reported $300 a month for her stipend.
This is insane. I actually, it's funny, you just reminded me, I have a friend who I met at a party who was on the crewing team, so row crewing team and or crew team, and she won bronze, and I can't remember when it was, you know, 2012 or whatever it was. And she showed me the medal. She had brought it to the party because she was giving a little bit of a talk or something like that. So she brought the medal to the party and I've never seen a medal. So I was like, I want to see that.
Yeah, yeah.
So she busted out of literally a plastic grocery bag. And I was like, this is what, why are you keeping it in this? And she goes, well,
yeah.
I do have a case, but it's like kind of annoying to carry it with me. And this bag is easier. And I'm like, you should probably have like a nicer bag for your medal because this thing could rip. And she goes, yeah. Funny, it has ripped before. And I was like, doesn't that freak you out? What if you're, you know, you drop it on the ground? She goes, see that dent? This is from when I was biking with it and it fell out of the bag and it fell on the ground. And I was like, why are you biking with your medal in a, like a thank you carryout bag? You know, those white bags that say like, thank you and repeat it. And I'm like, what are you doing with this? This is like a bag you get from, again, from Panda Express or something. And she goes, I don't have a car. And I said, why not? And she goes, well, I can't afford one. I work at a grocery store right now. I said, so you're on the team that had the best or third best, I guess, in the whole world at rowing, and you can't afford a car, and you work at a minimum wage job right now. Your medal is being kept in this plastic bag. And it sort of, it made me feel kind of a little bit ashamed because, again, there's nothing wrong with having these jobs. But the idea that you can be the best in the world or one of the best in the world at something and then still have absolutely no compensation from it at all other than teaching, like her best thing was teaching summer camp, rowing summer camp. That's like how she made enough money to not be super poor for the rest of the year.
Yep.
Because she can't work full time at the grocery store. She's rowing. It just sort of makes you feel a little ashamed to be in a country where we treat our athletes who bring us a lot of glory kind of crappy. We treat them kind of crappy.
Yeah. Once you reach that gold medal status, that's essentially, if you don't go out and reach, you know, Usain Bolt type status, which most people won't, you're basically what they primarily do is go coach at whatever it is that they do. Mm-hmm. And when we lived in Texas, my daughter was in gymnastics and one of her teachers was a gold medalist and she made minimum wage at a gym teaching, you know, 6-year-olds how to tumble. It's not to insult them. It's to say we should treat them better than that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In 2012, half of the track and field athletes said they made less than $15,000 a year.
It's just so unbelievable.
Yet in 2018, the track and field CEO made a salary of $1.2 million.
I'm a free market guy, so I get this in a way. But also, we really are forced. We're undervaluing these people, and we're doing it not by the market. This is forced. This is forced because we're refusing to value what these people bring to the country. And we're, I'm guessing there's some sort of longstanding lie about how they're going to be great with endorsements afterwards, which isn't true unless you're like Shaun White.
That, but we've also sort of, I hesitate to use the word brainwashed, but we've sort of cultivated this idea in our culture that these people are heroes. You want to believe that and you want to lift them up and you want to congratulate them for that. But then that's sort of the payment. You feed your ego and you get to be this person who is on top of the world representing America, but it's so hard to share that enjoyment with them and celebrate with them when you see what they've had to go through and how bloodied and bruised they are, mm-hmm. and how much they have to fund their own trips and their own travel and their own equipment, which I can get to in a second.
Yeah.
They have to pay for everything. Like everything that you see they're paying for, it's hard to be happy with them when I'm looking at them going, it's literally the carrot and the stick. And the carrot is a gold medal. And don't you want this shiny prize? While this CEO is making $1.2 million, while this organization's bringing in $312 million, while these massive sponsors are raking in millions upon millions of dollars in revenue from the ads they're running, and these executives are raking it in, while the people that we're actually interested in watching are being treated terribly. And it's just, it's hard to be happy for them even when they do well, you know?
This is like when someone says, I'll pay you an exposure, but this is, it's like that on on steroids, although probably shouldn't say that. We're talking about the Olympics. Somebody might get a little, calm down, Russia. Yeah. That's not what I mean.
Russia's not even allowed to participate in the Olympics.
Sorry, so ROC. Sorry, Russian Olympic ROC, Commission or whatever committee.
I did watch the cross-country skiing in prep for our conversation. I watched that. Okay. I was like, let me just watch from the beginning. And there's like 44 people that ski for 17 miles, and some of it is uphill. How do you ski uphill, you ask? Well, they're basically running with their sticks, and it looks absolutely brutal. And there's 44 of these people just like trudging along in the snow. They get up around this spot, and then they slowly start to go down a ways, and then they get right back uphill and have to go trudging along again. And I'm just, when it zooms out and I'm seeing them all just kind of bob along and I'm like, you're destroying your bodies and you're doing this all for other people to make profit while you chase this shiny gold medal. And my heart breaks for them. I don't mock them. I don't make fun of them. They are brutalizing themselves for the chance of being the best at something that once this is over, very few people are going to care about. And how do you take this on to do something else? And it's one of the reasons I pulled my daughter out of gymnastics. Because I'm like, I want you to spend your time doing something else, not wreck your body until you're 16 years old and then have nothing to show for it, but a chance to go make somebody else millions of dollars. It just, that blew my mind. I wanted her to work on her mental state and how she could become her own content creator and focus on that and college and generating revenue and understanding business school, as opposed to destroying her body like so many gymnasts do.
You know who won't tweet mean things about you even if you fall three times during your routine? The fine products and services that support this show. We'll be right. This episode is sponsored in part by Fidelity. We've all got old things lying around. Listen, if one of those things is an old 401k, it's time to take care of it. Whether you've recently left a job or you're just making time to get your finances in order, Fidelity can help you explore options for your old 401k. A Fidelity rollover IRA has no account fees or minimums. Plus, you can choose from a wide selection of investments. Learn more about options that may give you flexibility for using your money today and for your future. It's an easy-to-follow rollover process that makes it simple to get started online in under 15 minutes. And just in case you need any help along the way, you'll have access to one of Fidelity's rollover specialists. So why leave that 401k lying around? It's time to make sure you keep your money working as hard as you do. Learn more about a 401k rollover at fidelity.com/rollover. Consider all your options and the applicable fees and features of each before moving your retirement assets. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Back. Thank you for listening to and supporting the show. I love the fact that y'all are enjoying Skeptical Sundays. In fact, a lot of you are really upset about these Skeptical Sundays, which tells me we're doing it right. all of the sponsors, deals, discount codes, everything, all in one place. JordanHarbinger.com/deals is where you can find it. You can also search for the sponsors using the search box on the website as well. So please consider supporting those who support this show. Again, that's JordanHarbinger.com/deals. Now for the rest of Skeptical Sunday. What do they have to pay for? Like, is the USA gymnastics team, or are they at least paying for the coaches, for example, or does the athlete also have to pay for that?
That's a great question. So Lauren Williams is one of the most decorated track and field and bobsledding superstars that we have on our Olympic teams.
Quite the combo.
She was the first American woman to win medals in both summer and winter Olympics. And she once said that she, as highly decorated as she would make about $200,000 a year. But she said $200,000 becomes less than $100,000 really quick with all of our expenses. So what kind of things do they pay for? Well, first of all, every Olympic athlete has to be a part of what's called a club. So a club fee would be like, for example, in the U.S. Swim team. If you're not paying your club dues, which for the swim team is $5,800 or so per year.
Wow.
If you're not paying to be a part of the club, none of your times count. You won't register. And you won't be ranked in the country in order to even qualify for the Olympics. So like for me, the one hobby I have outside of fact checking and making people laugh who are drunk in Little Rock, Arkansas, I bowl. One thing I do, I love bowling. Well, if I go out and bowl a 300 during a game, it won't count unless I'm a member of the USBC. So I have to pay my annual dues. I have to pay my weekly dues. Every time I go bowl, I have to pay. If I don't pay and then I break some world record, the world record doesn't count. So you have to pay your dues. So just $5,000 a year just for the club fees alone. And then every time they travel, if you're going to go to some sort of qualifying competition in Colorado and you live in New York, you got to buy your own plane tickets. You got to pay for your own hotel. You have to pay to enter the competitions. You have to pay those fees, the entry fees. It's like gambling on yourself.
Yeah.
At a chance to win the $10,000 to be the best out of these 37 people, you have to, they're all taking your money to pay and you're all fighting for that number one spot. The vast majority of people leave with nothing. You have to pay for your own coaches. The USOPC does not pay for coaches. There's some coaching available, but if you want a dedicated coach for you, they don't just provide it. You have to pay that. It's usually upwards of about $100 to $200 per hour for coaching.
Oh, man.
You typically have to rent your own gym time. There are some USOPC dedicated practice facilities where you can reserve time, but it's so backed up and it's so full. A lot of times you have to go rent time somewhere else. You got to pay for that. You got to pay for a dietitian. You got to pay for massages. You got to pay for nutritionists. And 20% goes to your agent, by the way. And on top of that, not only are you, this money that you are bringing in is going out to all these other places, but you have to buy your own equipment. When you see people holding their rods and their skis and their goggles and the whole uniform, they have to buy those things. The one thing I didn't know about this going into this, which I learned as part of my research, is that they actually have to buy their own bobsled.
That's ridiculous.
I know, they have to buy it. And it's about $30,000 for one of those bobsleds. And you're like, how can someone live working part-time jobs here and there, afford this stuff? More and more Olympians are going to crowdfunding, going to like GoFundMe and stuff like that. And our men's bobsledding team got really creative with it. They did what's called the bob spread. They literally posed shirtless, and these are good-looking guys who have great bodies. They posed shirtless to raise $75,000 for all of their collective equipment, including the bobsled itself. So they had to sell a bunch of calendars, and yeah, they hit their goal. They actually made their goal and then some. But now you have the crowd funding these athletes and the USOPC profiting from it and paying their executives millions. It's just brutal.
So, okay, they're not getting paid. They have to pay for their own stuff. So there's negative pay, right? It's like they're going into debt to do this, and often not really, unless they get serious endorsements, they're not coming out the other side. What else do they have to put up with? That can't be the only inconvenience or drag on these poor folks.
Look, you would think, in most situations, when you're funding it, you've heard the old adage, it costs to be the boss.
Mm-hmm.
When you're funding yourself, you're an entrepreneur, you're generating the revenue, you get to say how things go. In fact, it's the opposite. These people are funding themselves in order to essentially be an employee to generate profit for another organization. And they have to go by these ridiculous restrictions. I don't know if you heard about the women's volleyball players, especially the beach volleyball. They have the size of their bikini bottoms regulated. They can't be more than 6 centimeters wide at the hip and no longer than 6 centimeters long. So if they're constantly like, you know, digging their thong out of their butt crack, it's because the Olympic Committee demands that that's what they do. The men's shorts are also controlled, but they're controlled to be a minimum of 10 centimeters above the knee or the top of the kneecap.
Huh.
So the men get to wear long shorts. The women have to wear these tiny thongs that are just barely covering themselves. And of course, it's, you know, sexualized.
Yeah, that's weird because obviously there's no function where it's like, hey, look, you know, when people jump in shorts, they can't get as much air. Because if that were the case, then dudes would be digging their thong out of their butt on TV
right.
also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, guys especially will do anything to get just a little bit of an edge over someone else. So clearly it's not a function.
Yeah. If you told guys they had to play volleyball with like a fig leaf duct tape to their crotch, they would do that if they thought it would give them an edge athletically.
Absolutely. Anything for the gold medal.
That's got to be a crap feeling, though. Like, you're one of the best in the world, and they're like, what we want, though, is for more people to watch, and in order to do that, you have to show more of your butt on TV. And it's like, this is the last thing I want to fucking worry about right now.
It's so demeaning. They even control, like, of course they can't make political statements, which I kind of understand, and they can't do any sort of protests, you know, like the whole fist on the podium thing from the 70s. They're not allowed to do that. But gymnasts are not allowed to wear bright fingernail polish, only neutral colors.
Why? Do we know? That doesn't make any sense.
They said it would, anything that would be a bright color to be distracting from the uniform.
Okay, sure.
These people are training, like I said, 6 hours a day, 6 days a week. There's constant injuries. The USOPC estimates, and I quote this, a near 100% injury rate.
So basically, you're going to get hurt during the Olympics.
You're going to get hurt. The pay is going to be ridiculously low. And basically no social life. So especially for teenagers, you're talking about sacrificing some of the best times of your life for this grueling physical work that will likely have no payoff whatsoever.
Unbelievable. So not necessarily injured during the Olympics. Sorry, during your training for the Olympics at some point.
Training or the side competitions. Yeah. Or, you know, getting ready or working out for the training. There's tons of injuries. Where do you go for that? It's not like we have banging healthcare in this country, right?
Right. No, that's a good point. So look, again, I'm usually a free market guy here. So is this just a function of, and it unfortunately doesn't sound that way, but is this just a function of, look, these don't generate a lot of cash? Like maybe the Olympic Committee generates a lot of cash, but there's, look, they've got a ton of employees they've got to pay. Those people need benefits. That's their actual job. They don't get any glory. Or is it that there are sports that rake in tons of cash and they just said, you know what, we can get away with not paying these people. So that's what we're going to do. Where does it lie?
That's a great point. It definitely, a little bit is tied to how much that sport brings in. But okay. Like, for example, people will talk about the NBA versus the WNBA. And they say, well, men are paid unfairly because the NBA players make more than the WNBA. I'm just as egalitarian as the next person. But if you look at the profit margins of the NBA versus WNBA, the NBA makes a ton more cash so they can afford to pay more. So if the WNBA players were demanding NBA salaries, the WNBA would literally go out of business. They cannot afford that level of salary because they're not bringing that much money into the sport. And so you would say that that's the same with Olympics, but even the high dollar sports are not bringing in that much cash. But I do have a quick list here for the top earning sports. So as a business decision, I want to know, should we cut some of these out and then start actually paying salaries to the top earning sports? It's something to be considered if you're going to treat this fairly. So the top earning sports are $6 million is what's brought in for the U.S. ski and snowboard team.
Okay.
$2.1 million for bobsled, $2.1 million for speed skating, $3.9 million for track and field, $3.4 million for the swim team. These are the people we see on the Wheaties boxes, right? These are the people
right.
we see in the commercials. $2.2 million for gymnastics. I thought that would be much higher.
I thought gymnastics would be the top because I feel
yeah,
like that's
too.
The only thing anybody watches that I know. Or maybe I just yeah. know a bunch of gymnastics fans for some reason.
Yeah, for some reason, the skiing and snowboarding, I think, has different types of events where the long jump and the flips and the it's just cool to watch them do all the big flips and they're doing it 40 feet or 60 feet in the air as opposed to, you know, off of a dumble track. So maybe it just, anything that's more dangerous probably is going to be more eyeballs on it.
Maybe they just attract more sponsors because there's more crap you have to buy to go skiing and snowboarding versus
That's
gymnastics,
a good point.
Where apparently you're not even wearing shoes, right? You can't even wear nail polish. So where do you get a sponsor? Like, here's a brand of chalk that I use to do flips.
Right. Yeah. That's a great point, man. You can't put a whole lot of sponsorships on that jersey, but
no.
You and I could just go skiing. You know what I mean? We could go
that's
pay
right.
for the stuff and just go skiing. We're not going to go on a balance beam anytime soon.
No, that's a good point. No, iron cross is for me.
On the flip side, The Golf Federation that participates in the Olympics, $26,000 is all they're bringing in. The roller sports, $50,000. The handball team.
What are roller sports? Is there rollerblading in the Olympics?
It's not rollerblading. I think there are, I don't know.
Literally don't even know what sport that is. I guess that's why it doesn't earn a lot.
I thought there was going to be some sort of skating situation. Yeah, I know. It doesn't earn a lot. The team handball. I know what handball looks like. I've never seen handball in the Olympics. Mm. It brings in $81,000. Tennis only brings in $90,000.
That surprises me.
But U.S. badminton brings in more than tennis. Badminton is $131,000. And then synchronized swimming is $156,000.
I'm surprised that synchronized swimming even brings in that. I mean, that's six times or whatever more than golf. That's shocking. I don't understand these economics.
Yeah, I don't either.
Okay.
So when you think about that money coming in, the millions of dollars that do come in, how are you going to divide that up among the people?
Yeah, I don't know.
So here's what the USOPC says they do. This is their claim. $33.2 million was spent on direct-to-athlete payments.
Okay.
Now, that sounds like I've been lying to you this entire time.
Right. That sounds like they're getting paid. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. $33.2 million direct-to-athlete. Here's how they classified direct-to-athlete payments. $14.3 million to 1,479 athletes, which averages out to $9,600 per person.
I didn't realize there were so many athletes. I guess that's the problem.
That is part of the problem.
If you'd ask me how many athletes I think there are, I would say under 200.
Yeah, I would have guessed a little higher than that, but well under 1479.
I mean, sorry, for televised sports, under 200. Of course, we're not talking about the roller sports that we couldn't even identify and golf that I didn't even really realize was the Olympics. Like, I'm not thinking archery. I'm thinking of like the ones, sorry, I guess in the top earning sports. Yep. But even if it's 600 or 500, whatever, it's not 1,479, which that surprises me. That's so much more than I thought.
Right. Which is why it's only, even if they did do it, it would only be $9,600 each. And I promise you, not every athlete is even getting $9,600.
Mm-hmm.
They also classify part of that money as $7.6 million toward health insurance. Of course, they have deductibles and other things that are out-of-pocket expenses for the athletes. $4 million in medal support. I could not find what even that means.
Medal support.
I do not know what that means. $5.3 million in medal bonuses, and that was along from the Pyeongchang Winter Games. And then $2 million on tuition and career assistance.
That's a little sus.
I agree. So those are not direct to athlete payments. So the numbers that they, and then if you even pull up the financial form that they released, that's where I'm literally copying and pasting into my notes from that form. That's all they say. There's no further explanation. There's no three or four deep dive pages to explain what health insurance coverage they get. That's all it says. 7.6 million health insurance. That's all it says.
Hmm.
Medal support. That's it. There's no explanation for what medal support is. So maybe we would have to, you know, talk to someone at the Olympics and see what kind of answer we could get. But yeah, the money is being spread so weirdly that it's hard to even track. Yet we know those executives are cashing in, making either near $1 million or over $1 million salary per year.
I know a lot of people boycotted the Olympics this year or said, you know, I'm not going to watch it. I'm not going to go there. It's in China. People were calling it the Genocide Olympics because of China's treatment of the Uyghurs. That had to put a dent in the money available for everything from direct to athlete payments to everything else about the Olympics this year.
Absolutely. When I mentioned at the top of this that the viewership was down 43%, I actually saw that on a YouTube channel by LaoY86.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He talks about viewership being down 43% because people are calling it the Genocide Olympics. And it's mostly due to China and their treatment of the Uyghurs, as well as the seven forced labor camps that are within 12 miles of the Olympic Games. He actually shows a map and shows where all of these are. Which, by the way, that's an entirely different topic for another Skeptical Sunday. I definitely want to get into that and address that at some point. We could tie tons of projects or tons of products back to those camps, whether it be iPhones or diamond rings or tennis shoes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of things we could address and go, you know, are we being proactive by actively supporting humanitarian causes and recycling and doing things that we think are good, but where's that money going and where's that product coming from? You know, I hate to ruin everything for everybody, but at some point, we need to address
those types.
No, I like
that. I want to do that. I want to ruin everything for everybody. That's the whole point of this particular segment of the Jordan Harbinger Show. We got our work cut out for us.
But those athletes, he shows in the video, athletes from these most recent Winter Games posting videos of their apartments completely flooding, like water pouring down from their light sockets. And it's kind of like when China built those two quick hospitals, remember, during the spike of COVID?
Yeah, yeah.
They put them up like so fast it made our heads spin. Everybody's like, wow, we were praising them. But then immediately there were plumbing issues. There were walls were crumbling. There were issues because they rushed it and used cheap materials. The same thing is happening for these temporary barracks they built for the Olympic athletes. It's bad. I mean, literally water pouring from electrical outlets.
I saw that. The Finnish, I can't remember. A Finnish athlete was like, their whole thing is flooded. Here's photos. And they made her delete those.
Yeah. So everybody that was there was forced to download a certain app mm-hmm. to do all of their posting. And China's removed well over 41,000 posts.
Wow.
Anything that said anything negatively about the Olympics, they were deleting. And they've banned over 800 users across multiple platforms just for telling the truth about the conditions in Beijing. And he even shows evidence of warnings to not eat the food provided. Like, this is coming from official committee members in the United States saying, do not eat the food provided, because they are not only concerned about American athletes being malnourished, they're concerned that and this is the quote, it may contain banned substances. So they were concerned something about what was going on was making our committees concerned that China may intentionally put banned substances in the food that they're serving so that our athletes would test positive for substances that they weren't allowed to have.
That would not really surprise me, given how bad Beijing wants to look, or I should say Xi Jinping wants to look.
Absolutely.
Compared to the United States and the rest of the world. Plus, I saw photos of the food and it looks horrendous. It looked disgusting. It was like fire fest.
So disgusting. I mean, it's bad. Now,
yeah.
And what I've seen pictures, different pictures from what the Chinese athletes are fed from what other foreign athletes are fed. And that's an interesting issue, because is it true? Are the Chinese athletes being forced to eat the same crap everybody else was having to eat?
Right.
But they were just showing different pictures because, you know, they don't want any trouble from their government? Or are they actually being fed better food? And now that's a whole new issue to address, right?
That's totally different. It wouldn't surprise me if they were eating better food, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they were eating the same crap and just weren't allowed to say anything about it.
They were being sent photos to share, you know, or whatever.
Right.
Which sounds super conspiratorial, but when you see what's been going on with Beijing and with Xi, you know, like you said, it wouldn't be surprising at all.
Propaganda looks like that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's not uncommon from North Korea, China, and frankly, often from the United States. We have our own version of propaganda, but usually it doesn't involve telling an athlete to post a picture of food and say that it's good or bad.
Right.
It's a little bit too micromanaged. We don't have that that kind of infrastructure in place quite yet.
Like Laowai86 says, and I encourage people to go watch his video. There's tons more info there. But he talks about how it completely backfired on China. They wanted to sort of mm-hmm. show how superior they were and how amazing they were. And some of the concept drawings would show like this ski jump, right, amongst these beautiful mountains and snowy hilltops. But instead, they're right next to these factories with like smoke coming out everywhere. And what he's saying is like they were kind of proud of this. They're saying, look, we're not poor. We have all of these industrial workers and plants and factories, and like, we're supposed to be impressed by that, but the concept drawings looked like it was going to be this beautiful scenery in nature, and it's just not the case. So my whole take on this is, until America starts helping with the funding, paying a fair wage to athletes, until, you know, ensuring their proper care overseas, and fair play, like the whole issue with the doping from the ROC, I think we should all remain very skeptical of the Olympics.
David, thank you very much. No more Olympic plans for me.
I'm out too. Thanks for having me, man.
As usual, I've got some thoughts on this episode, but before I get into that, here's a preview with a former undercover FBI agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family in New York for nearly 3 years, resulting in the arrest and conviction of 35 mobsters. And get this, he's not even Italian. Here's a bite.
Jordan, I've done everything. I mean, I have posed as a money launderer. I've worked as a drug dealer. I have worked as a transporter for drug dealers. I worked as a warehouse guy. The whole gamut. My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. If I wasn't working for the FBI, I would have been investigated by the FBI.
Exactly, yeah.
Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good-looking young lady. She's serving me drink. Hey, what would you like? Usually my drink was, give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink, the guys come in, I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money, that knot with the rubber band on it. Bam, I give her $100. You're not a guy who takes out a little leather wallet and he's going through the change or he's doing it. Can you imagine four gangsters sitting around going, let's split it up. I had the soup, you had the sandwich, the French fries. Well, what about the tip? Sometimes we get into bidding war. Guy goes, hey, your money's no good here. What are you doing? You're embarrassing me over here. What do you mean? You paid the land. Let me get it. Forget about it. You pay for it. If I would have gone in there and became a guy who had never a penny, never went into his wallet, never picked up a tab, never had a dime, never kicked up money, never gave tribute payments, that'd be on my ass. They throw me out. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more, including tricks wise guys use to know who's legit and who's not, mob culture, and the rules that govern the always upward flow of money, and how Jack became so trusted by the highest levels of the organization that they offered him the chance to become a made man, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia. Another one in the can. Thank you all for listening. Many of you did get back to me with positive feedback and suggestions for Skeptical Sunday. That's where a lot of these ideas come from, so please do keep those coming. As I mentioned, pretty much every week, these episodes probably aren't something we're going to do every single week, but we'll see what shakes out. It really does depend on a lot of different factors around here. Now I have no life. I have two kids, so I'm just creating shows and changing diapers all day long. Topic suggestions for future episodes of Skeptical Sunday are always welcome. Email me, jordan@jordanharbinger.com, and give us your thoughts. A link to the show notes for the episode can be found at jordanharbinger.com. Transcripts are in the show notes. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram, or just connect with me right there on LinkedIn. Love chatting with you there. You can find David Smalley at David C. Smalley on all social media platforms at davidcsmalley.com, or better yet, on his podcast, The David C. Smalley Show. Links to all of that in the show notes as well. This show is created in association with Podcast One. My team is Jen Harbinger, Jace Sanderson, Robert Fogarty, Ian Baird, Millie Ocampo, Josh Ballard, and Gabriel Mizrahi. Our advice and opinions, they're our own, and yeah, I'm a lawyer, but I'm not your lawyer. So do your own research before implementing anything you hear on the show. Remember, we rise by lifting others. Share the show with those you love. And if you found this episode useful, please share it with somebody else who needs to hear it. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time.